Hey there, Webcomic Beacon listeners, and Fess, and Alex, and Tom, and Eric, and whoever else might be here on the show. Anyway, this is Ross Scott, your former host of the Webcomic Beacon newscast. That's right, for a bunch of personal reasons, I've had to step aside from my noble post as your fearless leader, which, let's face it, I was never that fearless anyway. But I've had a great time doing the show this past year. I hope you've enjoyed listening more than I've enjoyed making it, and I hope to see you all around. But before I go, I just want to say thanks to Alex for always being on the show. Thanks to Eric for always collecting the links every week. Thanks to all of our guests. You made the show amazing. And thanks to Fess for pestering me to be on the show in the first place. Oh, and of course, thanks to all of you at home for listening. It would not have been the same show without you, or at least it would have had less listeners, and that would have sucked. So, I know I will see you all around in the internets, if you will, and maybe over at my website, which I will hopefully keep up with any new projects, over at systemcomic.com. But with that, I hope you enjoy the new newscast in whatever direction it takes, and hopefully this will be like when Craig Kilborn stopped hosting The Daily Show and actually got way better. So, with that, one final time, I say to you all, peanut butter and jelly. See you around.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
It's November 27th, 2011, and this is episode 44 of the Webcomic Beacon newscast with Alex Heberling from alexsguide.net.
Good morning, internets.
We also have Eric Dramos Kimball from bladebunny.com and xern.com.
Afternoon, internet, depending on when you're listening to this.
And me, your new host, Thomas Revor, writer of marinelouis.com and the guy in charge of 910cmx.com. Where we're all celebrating that most wonderful time of year. That's right, Black Friday to Cyber Monday. Our top story of the day, Penny Arcade turns 13. Yay.
Yay.
And there was much rejoicing. Yay. They haven't died.
And Penny Arcade celebrates this with a rent from Tyco, which means it's 2 o'clock. all joking aside, I am glad to see webcomics, whether they be as popular as Penny Arcade or as not popular as some of the others, that have shown a consistency and the longevity. I mean, 13 years, no matter what you're doing, is quite a feat.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do have to hand it to Gabe and Tyco for... forget the merchandising, forget the attitudes, forget the video games, for just keeping on doing something like this for 13 years. Yeah, so
it's becoming an industry. I mean, yes. when you have someone doing something for 13 years, it's no longer just a flash in the pan. This is jobs that people have.
And when you look at the longevity from Penny Arcade, from Sluggy Freelance, from Kevin and Kel, and so many others that have been out there. It really, you can't just say webcomics are a passing fad anymore. I mean, yeah. Over a decade for some of these people, and a lot of others that are approaching a decade mark very quickly as well. Yeah. So, kudos to y'all who have hit 13 or longer, and let's hope we see a lot more. Remember, folks, if you're doing a webcomic, the main thing is stick with it. Mm-hmm. But now, let's go ahead and go over to another story. Over at, from Walmart, specifically Sam's Club, they have banned a book called the Brick Testament from, and I'm trying to find the name, Brendan Smith. I wonder if he's a Brendan Smith that I know. Who has been, for 10 years, telling the story of the Bible with Lego figures.
Which is just brilliant, I have to say, yes. Right off the bat.
Yes.
If nothing else, I think it's a great way of getting kids to see some of this stuff, but there are people who do have a problem with it. That's the reason Sam's has pulled the book from the shelves is because of a number of complaints it's received. Most specifically, because of mature content, and I'm making air quotes here, folks, mature comment in the book, the fourth book in the series, The Brick Bible.
The problem is that The Brick Bible has stories from the Bible, which
is not the most clean story.
There's a lot of begatting going on in that Bible.
There's lots of knowing one's wife and whatnot.
Yeah, and I mean, as you were saying pre-show, one of the things people are complaining about is the author is an atheist, in that the author doesn't believe in God and just is presenting the Bible as a story. And if you're doing that, you know, then you don't pull your punches on some of the racier stories because that's interesting to you.
And there's a lot going on because the Old Testament. Again, let me go ahead and clarify, folks. I am a Christian. I don't believe to any specific denomination, but I am a Christian. And the Old Testament was more of a history story of what went on with the chosen people and God's interaction with them.
And it comes from an oral tradition and an oral tradition of storytelling. And if you look at any storytelling tradition, you have to make it interesting. You can't have a dull story. I mean, Shakespeare is racy. And the reason that these are racy stories is that people will remember the racy stories.
Some of the raciest stuff that I've ever read was the Song of Solomon in the Bible. You know, that's some good Bible there, folks.
That's like some Barry White in there.
But I mean, I do understand the complaint in that it's Lego figures, so it looks like it's something for little kids that will get them interested in the Bible, and then when you actually look at it, there are some things that are a bit mature, because the Bible has mature stories. I mean, if you even think about it, a lot of the Bible's about killing people left and right, so it's mature. Now, one of the interesting complaints was that the racy stuff was not in the book. It was on the website, the webcomic for it. So they pulled some of this racy stuff, and what happened is people would then go check out the website and say, oh, this is racy, we don't want our kids buying the book and then looking for the website, sort of thing. So it's sort of an interesting thing where the webcomic, even though it's not associated, the content on the webcomic, even though it's not associated with in the book, is still causing problems here.
And even though Sam's has pulled it, the book is available from a number of other sources, including their own website at bricktestament.com. So, read it for yourself, folks. You know, don't let other people make up your minds for you. Reviews from one person may not be the same for others. And sometimes, they say that the devil can preach the gospel as well. So, who knows? Maybe something coming from an atheist can still be, if taken literally, good reading. From there, let's go over into the world of Cartoon Network, where they are hosting television and live shows and non-cartoon things nowadays, you know, where the extremely popular cartoon Adventure Time with Finn and Jake is making the leap over to comic books. Frederator Studios' Cartoon Network's hit Adventure Time is coming to comics in February from one of the best licensing companies around, Boom Studios, and their all-ages Kaboom imprint.
And it's being written by Ryan North,
who is
Dinosaur Comic fame.
With art from Sheely Paroline, who's done a number of other things, including the Snow White version from The Muppets. Now, I mean, my own opinions about Adventure Time aside, I love to see things like this because it shows that comics are still a viable medium, whether print or web, because so many other things are taking the leap from their own media to the comic industry. As I mentioned before show, I mean, to me it started off back in the late 60s with the Gold Key Star Trek comics, or the Gold Key Lost in Space comics. And it's becoming, we're getting out of the funny book business and more into serious stories. Granted, Adventure Time's not exactly a serious story.
No, it's not.
You can't make that leap
with Adventure Time.
It's sometimes a little bit silly, if you haven't gathered that already.
I've seen a couple of episodes.
Serious comics, and Adventure Time is a great example.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of episodes, and yeah, old man here. It seems like something that you have to have at least a hit or two of acid to understand.
I think you have to stop trying to understand it. Frankly,
just embrace it. Just love it for what it is.
Yeah,
drugs in the world. To make
after suffering through things like Flapjack and what's the other ones they used to have. Chowder and some of the other less than qualitized, to make up a word, shows on from Cartoon Network. Yeah, you have to wonder.
But I just find it interesting that more and more of these webcomic people are being tapped from these sorts of things. You had Dr. McNinja's writer writing a episode of Deadpool. They grab Ryan North for Adventure Time. So there is starting to be a path from webcomics, which, if we're honest, don't make any money, and to more traditional media, where you can actually make a living off of it.
Are you running a hairdryer over there?
Sorry.
Yeah, this is radio only. You don't have to primp and preen.
Maybe he wants to anyway, just because he wants to feel pretty.
Yes.
I've met you. You've got a face made for radio.
You're mean. Yeah.
Would it help if I sang, I feel pretty, oh so pretty, and...
I feel pretty and witty and bright.
Well, no, this is Eric. He can't be too bright. And speaking of which, let's go over one of the other stories that's come out is writer of Contrapussy, the webcomic, Camila Ranson and Buffy actress Emma Caulfield are coming out with a new webcomic based on Jack the Ripper. Yeah, because that's never been done before.
It's been done a lot, but it's a interesting take on it. Their website is, they focus too much on style over substance, unfortunately. So I don't know how well this is going to do. But they're starting up a new campaign. The interesting things is, I mean, first of all, that we have a famous person making a webcomic, and the second thing is that you did a Kickstarter and made a ton of money off of that Kickstarter for the campaign.
Yeah, as I commented before show, I'm sorry, we've got great examples. Most webcomics go in with almost no funding. How expensive, unless they're paying, you know, someone with 30 years in the art business to do their webcomic, it's a losing proposition for the people who are donating via Kickstarter. Webcomics don't really need anything like that.
But, I mean, here's the thing, Tom. You say most comics go in with no money. That is true. And most webcomics come out with no money as well. And Emma Caulfield, whatever you feel about her, her name recognition is worth something. And so if she's going to put her name on a project, she's going to want to get paid off of that. So... why not? I mean, Kickstarter is the best way to get money for your comic. It's the get the money up front and get it paid for, and then you at least know you've made a certain profit.
Yeah, it rankles me that unlike other Kickstarter projects that have a legitimate goal, I mean, this is basically a perpetuation of something where they could have used their own money for it. An example of another Buffy alumni. The Guild. Yeah, I can't think of her name now.
Felicia Day.
Felicia Day. I should be slapped for that. The extremely cute Felicia Day, who did the Guild with her own financing. Or Dr. Horrible from Joss Whedon and family. Their own funding. And this is full-blown video things that are going on, not a webcomic. And I mean, I hate to denigrate, or it sounds like I'm denigrating the business we're all in, but the expense on webcomics isn't that much, even with an artist, and the amount that they must be asking for on, to go to Kickstarter, it seems a bit excessive.
I think it seems perfectly reasonable if you're thinking someone's getting paid a daily salary for the comic, and you assume that you're not going to make any money off of it. Both the Guild and Dr. Horrible were speculative projects. I mean, they were risks. They went in there and they say, we're going to risk this and we're going to build a product that we know we can sell, and we're going to use that money, and then we're going to see if we can make money off of it. Now, a webcomic, they're harder to sell. And I don't fault them for not wanting to take a risk on this. I mean, if they can get the money up front, I say more power to you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I have no problem with people wanting to do stuff like this, and definitely not using the star power. It just, you know, it kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. And talking about leaving a bad taste in my mouth, one of probably our most important stories of this week.
Oh, God. So they're trying to bait me into something here. I kind of went off on the story about Akewood returning. This has been all over the news network, and as the person who collects the news, sometimes when I see the same story 10 times, it kind of wears on me. Akewood is saying that they're going to come back from hiatus, and this time they really, really mean it. Unlike the 4 other times that they've gone on hiatus and come back. I just got sick of it because everyone was so excited about it. I'm like, okay, this isn't really a story. Why are you wasting this space? And that led me into a rant about Kate Beaton. And let me just say, first of all, I like Kate Beaton. I have nothing against her. I have something against stories about Kate Beaton because I cannot take another freaking Kate Beaton is a woman who makes webcomics isn't that fascinating story. I can't take it anymore. Stop it. Just to the general world at large, to everyone who is collecting stories, stop the empty Kate Beaton story. Now, if Kate Beaton suddenly cures cancer or sticks up a shopping mart, something interesting, fine, talk about it. If you're just talking about the fact that Kate Beaton exists, stop. I understand. She exists. You like her. Great.
So to summarize, you're saying any more stories on Akewood returning would be beating a dead horse.
Oh, that's it. I quit.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, I went off this week because it was Akewood and Kate Beaton at the same time, but every week there is some story like this where I'm reading this and I'm like, why is this everywhere? Why is everyone talking about this?
For those who don't know about how we do the show behind the scenes, Eric makes a Google Doc of all the links that he collects every week. And this week, under the Akewood heading, it takes up like an entire page.
Yeah, about a page and a half. Tell us how you feel. Really feel, Eric.
It's really kind of impressive.
But, and this is not take the devil's advocate side, I'm actually kind of glad to see it because, A, it does put a positive spin on webcomics. You know, most people are going to be seeing that as, ooh, she's returning, not, oh, she's returning again.
Well, no, Kate Beaton is not Akewood. Kate Beaton has not gone on hiatus. And we're told that every single week that Kate Beaton has not gone on hiatus. this is Chris Onstead, who is the maker of Akewood. And, yeah, he's returning, and it was a very popular comic back in the day. And there are people who are very excited about Akewood returning. Kate Beaton was just completely unrelated. It's just, it was the same sort of thing of I'm seeing story after story about her. But, yeah, I mean, the upside is both Chris Onstead and Kate Beaton and the ones that the media latch onto, the stories are always positive. They're always positive about the personalities. So we can sort of look at it as a blessing, I guess.
And with some of the personalities in the webcomic world, who we'll probably be discussing a little bit later, depending upon when you hit them, Gabe and Tycho can either be some very nice people or they can be absolute jerks.
Yeah.
And others in other popular webcomics who are nothing but absolute jerks. To me, it's good to see somebody who at least has a positive attitude and a positive spin on the story as opposed to the Trekkie freak show that we could be getting for webcomics.
That is true. They have picked the nicest, most attractive people in webcomics to represent us. So I suppose we should really be glad that that's the stories that they're doing.
Any sort of good press is good for all of us, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the old saying of any press is good press, no. In what still can be considered a fledgling industry such as webcomics, we need all the good publicity that we can get.
Yes.
So remember that, folks. Donate to us. We're nice we people.
Yeah.
And speaking of, I love some of these incidental segues we get. Yeah, talking about money. we've got a new payment gateway. You got that misspelled, Eric. System coming up. Another competitor to PayPal called Dwolla. D-W-O-L-L-A. That sounds like something out of the old Super Friends cartoon. Yeah, we're getting a message from the planet Dwolla. And it's another one advertising about another method of making payments and separating people from their money. Now, I looked at the video that they had and the article they had. It's advertising for advertising's sake about their own thing. It doesn't really give any specifics. And we've seen so many other payment systems, you know, from Wells Fargo to Western Union to Google to Amazon and many others that have just gone by the wayside because they didn't work. Is this just going to be another flash in the pan PayPal competitor, or are there actually going to be legs for this thing?
Yeah, the problem is, and the problem that most people who want to get into this business have, is that the flaws in PayPal are very small. There are only a few small flaws in PayPal. So if you want to compete, it's really hard to find some reason why someone should use your system over PayPal. I mean, what's the advantage there? And Dwolla says that they give you better returns, but PayPal's really cheap, and they don't take a lot. So, yeah, I think this is going to go nowhere.
I mean, there's some of the competitors that I've seen that have been moderately successful against PayPal. Both you and I know from experience from some of the webcomics we've done, is PayPal's attitude towards racy material.
Yeah. No, I mean, adult content is the only place you can move into. It's the only sphere where the payment gateways are not measuring up. But all of these companies don't want to get into adult content for obvious reasons, because as soon as you get into adult content, no one else wants to use your system. No one wants to transfer money with the racy payment system. So it's sort of a catch-22, you know. And those are the ones that do well. I mean, like, Veritol is doing really well for itself. But, yeah.
And then,
do you have any thoughts?
Alex?
Not really. It's a hard nut to crack. So I wish them luck.
But
I don't necessarily see it going anywhere. It's got a silly name.
if we can move to the next story about Flatter, if you mind, if you don't mind, Tom.
I don't mind at all.
Yeah, I mean, because this sort of ropes into here, Flatter is hosting a day saying, pay your blogger day, which is trying to make an official holiday of using Flatter, which sort of seems like a sign of desperation on Flatter's part. And yet again, Flatter was this idea that you pay them a flat fee and then you can sort of divide up the money among a whole bunch of different websites. And so it was a micropayment scheme, and it's clearly not doing too well.
It's a lot more popular in Europe than it is here, probably because it primarily uses euros.
Yep.
And all they get are micropayments over in Europe nowadays with their economy.
Yeah,
it didn't really catch on with the North American audience as much.
Because here's the thing. The North American audience wants to get something for their money. And this is always, I first thought this was a great idea, and then I realized it's not going to work at least in the North American audience, because when we give money to someone, we want something in return. We want to see a measurable amount of return, and Flatter denies you that. You know, you're paying some portion of your money. You have no control of how much portion it is because you're dividing it up. You don't get anything in return. And the blogger or comic sort of doesn't really acknowledge you individually because it's such a small payment. It goes against our capitalist sensibilities.
At least with something like Kickstarter, you at least get a moderately famous celebrity female in a bunny suit.
Yep, there you go. That was in relation to our previous story about Emma Caulfield. That was one of her giveaways for the...
curious, is it a bunny suit or is it a bunny suit?
No, it's a big... This is from Buffy. It's a big...
Like a Halloween costume.
Halloween, yeah. Unsexy bunny suit.
They want American male like money for an unsexy bunny suit? Yeah.
Well, if you were a Buffy fan, you would go crazy over it. It's one of the most iconic Buffy the Vampire Slayer images. So,
to which I can only reply, actual size. Buffy fans will get that. But on a similar note, with micropayments, we also get another rant. This one from Chris Straub over at webcomics.com, who has a comment, more than just one comment, about, what is it called?
Ka-chingle.
Ka-chingle. What an absolutely...
Another silly name.
At least PayPal makes sense. Ka-chingle, Dwala, I mean...
I guess it's supposed to be like ka-ching, like a cash register or something, but...
But this one's another micropayment donation site, where, just as with the other site, you pay them, they distribute it out.
Yep. It's exactly like Flatter, except they saw what happened to Flatter in that no one adopted it, and so they said, well, we'll get around that by not having people adopt it.
We'll make it
collect money for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which... impresses, and then they say, well, if the user doesn't come and collect the money, it's donated to charity. And that impresses me as something that's not going to work on a lot of levels. Now, I mean, because no one's going to use that. No one is going to go to a site that says, your money may go to the site you want, or it may go to a charity that you have no idea what it is.
And in fact, it drew the attention because there has the New York City has filed an injunction, which has been granted, against Ka-chingle for their methodology. Apparently, they were doing this for the New York Times, and God knows the New York Times needs money.
Yeah.
And it's just going through and collecting money on their behalf, which is fraud. I mean, there's no other two ways around it. What Ka-chingle was doing was absolute fraud.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's not going to work on a social net on a social level. People aren't going to use it, and even if it did work, it's illegal. So it's sort of a weird thing to rant about because yes, I'm upset about people doing illegal things as well, but that's not really something you need to rant about. It's, you know, somewhere out there someone's getting mugged, and I'm against them people taking other people's money. So, yes.
Now, I mean, I do support the fact that he's got a soapbox, he can use his soapbox, and it is something to point out what Kachingle is doing, because there may be people who get suckered into this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, this thing is literally one step above a Nigerian prince scheme. That's about the level it's on.
What? They said they'd send me that money. But let's go ahead, and we're going to take a break as we go over to our commercial, and we want to thank our sponsors for continuing to help support us here at the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And we will be right back after these messages.
The 4th anniversary special of the Webcomic Beacon podcast is coming up this December, and there is a giveaway. That's right, several people have sent in their print versions of their comics to be given away for this special occasion, such as Bittersweet Candy Bowl, Theater Hopper, Demon Graphics, Doc Rat, and also Zombie Ranch. You can enter to win any one of these prizes by going to webcastbeacon.com/giveaway for further information, such as sending in a voicemail, drawing us some Becky art, or signing up for our link referral program. And this is open to everybody except for me. I don't count, but you count. Go to webcastbeacon.com/giveaway and get in on the 4th anniversary special for the Webcomic Beacon podcast.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomics Beacon Newscast. I'm your host, Thomas Revor, with my special guest, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
And brony hater Eric Kimball.
Oh, jeez. That is a lie. I just want to say it's a lie. I just said Batman brony and My Little hater. Pony is a large jump to connect together, and I was impressed you did it.
And then I said, shut up, Eric. The adults are speaking.
So, yes, you can go over to bladebunny.com and leave any nasty messages about him hating us bronies as much as you want. But back to the news stories. Let's go ahead and start off talking about the newcomers to the webcomic and digital print comic world, DC Comics and Marvel Comics. For those of you who have taken a look at what their offerings are, DC and Marvel are both beginning to have their digital print comics come out on the same day as their standard print comics, which is a great thing. But both of them are charging more for the digital print comics than they are for the standard print comics. And there's an article over it that we've been looking at talking about it. And to bring up the topic of conversation, it makes no sense for me to have a digital print comic be more expensive than a print comic. There is not the overhead. You aren't paying printers. You aren't paying paper. You aren't paying inks. You aren't paying shipping. Yeah. Why are you charging more, folks?
Because you're terrified of the direct market, that they will drop you. I mean, this has been the same story over and over again. You know, DC and Marvel hitched their wagon to the comic book shops. They abandoned supermarkets. They abandoned all other chains. They went to the collector's market because it was good money at the time. Now they're in a situation where it's absolutely obvious that the comic book shops, at least a majority of them, are not going to survive because digital is a lot easier and it has a much wider reach. they want to move into that, but they cannot just say, well, okay, comic book shops, you're out, because then the comic book shops all drop all their books and they die.
Yeah, so, the comic book shop has been a dying medium for a long time. I mean, it is very niche market, and just selling comic books by themselves doesn't work. You have to have something along there with, whether it be a lot of the comic merchandising, and heaven knows there's a lot of that out there, or side stories. I used to work for a comic shop back in Avon Park, Florida, and if you're still out there, Art, hope you're doing well. Where he had a side business of cowboy memorabilia going on. But, I mean, just comic books themselves don't work. But is this a good thing or a bad thing, such as the jacking up the price? Are they cutting off their nose to spite their face?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Currently they're not, because there's no other competition. You know, I've heard people talk about this, and they say, you know, look, at Marvel and DC could do nothing. They could do nothing to embrace digital, and they can go on for another 20 years like this, you know, of just selling comic books the way they've been selling it and trying to sell digital. The problems that they have are so incredibly systemic that it's going to really take a lot to get them out of this, because basically their entire stream of distribution is dying, and their entire product was targeted to that stream of distribution. They sell teenage power fantasy, preteen power fantasies. That's what they sell. And so it's not only the comic books that you have to go digital, they have to fundamentally change the stories they're telling as well. And it's an uphill battle. So right now, because no one else is really in this sphere, they can get away with it. But as soon as a competitor comes out there and can sell similar quality work for, you know, a dollar, which is what they should be selling these for, selling a 50-page book for a dollar, then they're going to get crushed. So I don't know.
See, and I don't say that it is working nowadays. Like I said, comic book shops have been going down for a while now. And as we've seen, as in very recent times, DC completely rebooting their entire line for this new 52 nonsense. And Marvel has done similar things. They have actually been trying to go more towards the younger crowd. The average purchaser of comics is mid-30s to 40s.
Yeah.
And for teenage power stories, as you said, they are not getting the teenagers. The whole reboot scenario is towards that. So why wouldn't they go through and use the digital medium, cut the cost for the audience that they know is out there that they want? Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they're not taking advantage of the younger generation that's coming up. I mean, there's a whole gigantic market of girls reading, you know, manga that they're not paying attention to at all. I think in this specific article on ComicsBeat that they point out that the digital versions of these comics are often more expensive because comic stores will give you discounts for actually coming into the store. Sometimes you have to have a pull list or a subscription account, but, you know, often their prices will be discounted.
Yeah.
And honestly, go ahead.
No, and they don't give you any deals for digital.
Yeah, none at all.
No. You should be honored that they are giving you the option of buying their book digitally. That's the deal. They have gone out of their way and given you a digital format. It's not like everyone owns a scanner and can't put it on a torrent within minutes of it being released. No, you should be honored that they're giving you a digital format.
Yeah. And speaking as the old guy again, I mean, there is just something about holding a paper book, whether it be a book, a comic book, whatever, having that tangible medium in your hands. That's why a lot of webcomics, a lot of successful ones, have gone from the webcomic medium to the print medium. because people want that hard copy there.
For now. I mean, this is the thing that puts terror in the hearts of every publisher, is that yes, the generation that grew up with books still prefers books. The generation that is growing up with digital doesn't have that same association with books. And there's going to be, you know, within 20 years, there's going to be a whole generation that doesn't care about books because they've gotten everything digitally. And this is the doomsday scenario. You know, this is the thing that's why I say 20 years, because we have people being born now that in 20 years are going to dominate culture. And
yeah, I'm kind of like right on the cusp of that generation, because yeah, my primary source of entertainment has been the internet since I was, you know, 12 or 13 or so. But, you know, for the people younger than me, it's going to be even a larger part of their life. So
yeah.
Back in my day, we had to use webcomics on punch cards, and we liked it.
Yeah. Burned in the hide of the gazelles. But yeah, I mean, and the other problem is, you know, about selling teenage power fantasies. Yet again, with the internet, we have real porn now. So it's hard to compete with that.
And lots of it is free.
Yeah, and it's all free. So I don't need to see, you know, some sexy
Starfire
superhero
naked, yes, with Starfire a giant phallic monster behind her.
Yes, I don't need to see Starfire naked in a bikini randomly offering sex, because I can download the video of the naked girl randomly offering sex to the pizza guy for free. So why am I paying you for that? It's a dying business.
It certainly is. And but on a similar note is a comment from Mark Miller, who has a blog out and is talking about how day and date digital, with basically the same release date of digital comics as the print comics, is not a good thing for the comic industry itself, suggesting that a theatrical to DVD type model, where you have the print version and then a month later have the digital version come out, would be a lot better for the industry.
See, I say the exact opposite. I say you release the digital first, and then you collect it up into a print book collection, and you release that later as the collector DVD sort of thing. I think that he's looking at it the wrong way, because the digital is the cheap disposable copy. That's the thing everyone looks at. That's the thing that builds up buzz. And then you sell the book as the premium content. That's what happens with movies. The movie, you go to it and you walk away and you're done. And then you go and buy the DVD so you own it.
See, to me, I think it's harmful that Miller has it wrong, but for a different reason. And a lot of it is that targeted audience they're wanting to go for. Who goes to comic shops nowadays are the 30 to 40-year-old men who have been growing up on comic books. The hardcore collectors. They're going to be going to the stores and buying the hard copies. Everyone else, the young kids especially, are going to be waiting for... They don't have to have it right now. They'll wait for the digital version, which they can get easier.
Yeah. That is one thing that we learned in webcomics. Asking people to pay for advanced pages of the comic never worked. That was a method we tried out, where we said, "Look, we're going to give you the digital. We'll give you this comic ahead of time if you pay us money." And everyone said, "No, we'll wait." And it's never worked. Which is sort of the Marvel strategy of saying, well, in a month, or it was like in a month they dropped the price to $2 from $3.
Yep.
I was just reading that and I was saying, okay, everyone's going to wait. Everyone's going to say, well, wait the month. There's not a particular burning need for your comic. And so why not just release it at the $2 mark if you want to build buzz? Because what you're doing is you're spreading out people reading it.
Well, we talked about spreading out with the porn earlier, so. But now, to go on to a different story, it's time to raise the curtain. It's time to light the lights. It's time to go to Facebook with the Muppet Show tonight. The Muppets have been using their resurgence by promoting itself on Facebook and other social media, trying to get the viral buzz that we've been getting. There's an article talking about it over on Mashable.com, talking about how Disney and the Muppets are trying to use this viral media, the new media, to advertise their new movie. Now, we've seen a lot of this in recent past. Most notably, the one that sticks out in my mind was the way that they advertised The Dark Knight using viral media. Is this the way that we're going to be seeing all the things going in the mass media, or is this just a one or two type thing, depending upon the structure and the content?
I think it's the type of content. The Muppets lended themselves to social media, and they used it brilliantly. I mean, they were just brilliant with it. Not everything you're going to release lends itself to social media. The Muppets are silly. The Muppets are, by their nature, viral sort of content. If you were doing a film about the Holocaust, you can't do a viral campaign on that. That's too serious.
But it also,
it's
kind
of depressing.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I mean, you've surely heard about the Happy Holocaust.
It sounds like some horrible, horrible theme read that will exist in like 100 years.
I thought this was the next movie coming out from Uwe Boll. So
the Happy Holocaust.
It's a musical too.
Oh, it hurts to laugh.
But yeah, I definitely. The content used. I mean, a lot of the social media, I don't have to say anything about the seriousness of it, because, like I said, you can't say that there was anything humorous about The Dark Knight, and yet it used the viral media formats to the best that I've seen to this day.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, it just takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of thought, and it takes someone who is very savvy with this, and so I think we'll see this, but unfortunately it's one of these things that it is a production in its own right.
Do you think that with the success of some of these viral media promotions, though, we're going to get inundated with things like this and it's going to lose its uniqueness?
Unfortunately, for every viral media success, then is immediately followed by a horrible viral media failure by someone who didn't quite understand it.
Nice.
And so I don't think it's ever going to become the major thing, simply because I think that a lot of the media companies have learned that viral media is pretty uncontrollable. And you can't just come out here and say, we're going to be viral and we're going to do exactly what the Muppets did. Because if anyone out there tried to repeat what the Muppets did, it would not work. Because everyone will say, we saw that. We're not interested. So I never think it's going to become a major thing. I think it's useful to study the Muppets and see what they did and sort of see how it worked, because there's a lot of good elements in there. But I don't think it's ever going to be a major thing worldwide.
I just worry with some of it, because a lot of the viral marketing that I've seen has worked well. Like I said, Dark Knight, Tron Legacy, even the Muppets. It's been done well, and it's been received well. But Hollywood is a bandwagon mindset. If something works well, everybody jump on it and beat that horse to death.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, viral media is kind of different in that you can't get on the bandwagon. And because it doesn't repeat.
Alex?
Like webcomics.
Yes.
It relies on luck and timing.
Yeah, I mean,
and kind of who notices you and when they notice you and whatnot.
How many people made comics about two guys hanging out in their apartment talking about video games? And how many people were successful? One. One set of people.
One and a half.
One and a half.
That other
one. Yeah, well, yeah, until you have a miscarriage.
He who must not be named.
And I mean, we could see that money isn't going to be a big thing, because how many people even remember Zooda, which was DC Comics' attempt to get into the webcomic world?
Yeah, well, I remember Zooda. I seriously someday want to write a doctoral thesis on Zooda. It was a sad injury. It's like they were going out of their way to do everything wrong. It was impressive.
And they still have their website up, basically saying how they got October 7th of last year, 2010, Zooda is dead. They took everything wrong that could be done with webcomics and reduced it down to its essential core to make the biggest brand of suck I have seen in my time. Yes. Except for Pet Rocks.
But moving on to the news.
The United Kingdom enacts filtering for porn, gambling, and other content. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or whatever the EF stands for, expressed their disappointment with Australia's two largest internet service providers for doing this, and now the UK has done it. Now, for a lot of the webcomics out there, this won't take too much of effect, but do you think this is harmful to the industry as a whole?
I think it can be very dangerous. Simply because we have seen, like we did a story a little while back about how Visa decided to ban everything furry. And there's very little recourse on that. And with these filtering, yet again, there's very little recourse. If someone in the government decides something is pornographic, everything related to it gets slapped. Now, they're not doing anything. I mean, the argument for this is always saying, "Well, this is just to protect people, and we're not going to be aggressive."
Think of the children.
Yeah, and yes, they're not going to be aggressive now. In 10 years, who knows? And so, it's a little worrisome.
I think you've got it right on the head there. We'll think for you. You're not bright enough to be able to avoid this content yourself. You know, rather than go to something dangerous like, you know, trying to do something against malware or black hat attacks or spam, let's go after something that you can actually do yourself because you people just can't handle it. And since I seem to have said the last word on that one, let's go to our final story. We're going to talk about how prescient one of our webcomic people are. Pete Abrams over at Sluggy Freelance. And this one this was left field all the way. Pete Abrams has written about Dr. Irving Schlock, one of the characters in Sluggy Freelance, who creates inflatable robots. The concept is absolutely, completely silly, and yet...
It exists.
And yet, it has been done. There is an inflatable robot created by other lab called the Ant Roach. It's an inflatable anteater cockroach robot that's about 3 feet tall and I'd say about 9 to 10 feet long. It can actually lift a few hundred pounds at 50-60 pounds per square inch. There's a lot interesting about this, and it does, I mean, with it being inflatable, low weight cost, low traveling cost, could this be something to look into, and what potential uses could something like this have?
Yeah, it's actually technologically very impressive. By the way, if a giant anteater... inflatable anteater cockroach hybrid robot sounds creepy to you? It is. It is very creepy. But
yeah, just look at the picture.
it's creepy. But yeah, no, the ability to make a robot that is literally, you can pack up, and they do show this robot packed up in a small box, is very impressive, and it's impressive technologically, and they have some inflatable arms that are even more impressive. But yeah, when Pete Abrams proposed it, it was supposed to be the silliest thing imaginable, and yet now it exists. So it's a little weird.
I'm seeing the term Pneubotics, P-N-E-U-B-O-T-I-C-S. Mm-hmm. I mean, it actually has a serious name for this type of stuff. And reading through this article, which we'll link to on our site, of course, the first thing that comes to mind for me is I could see this actually being the future of the space program. Because rather than sending up a heavy-duty powered thing, a powered robot, we send one of these inflatable ones up there. We've already got the liquid oxygen in the tanks. Less weight, less space. We can send more of these things up. And if one pops, you've got four others there in the space that it would take to send one regular robot.
No, it's a very interesting technology.
But...
And Pete Abrams came up with it. So
Pete Abrams, yeah. Who'd have thought webcomics... We can now talk about people like Arthur C. Clarke, Gene Roddenberry, and Pete Abrams. Webcomics rule the world.
Yes.
Now I'm just waiting for my handheld laser cannon, and we're all good to go.
I'm waiting for my jetpack. But that brings us to the end of this week's show. I want to thank everybody coming in. And before we go, let's go ahead and talk about... We will have a list of different tutorials for you artists out there. Which are over on DeviantArt. Those will be linked to on our site. And I also want to bring up a new section, which will be the webcomic of the week, where we'll go ahead and we'll talk a little bit about a webcomic that draws one of our attentions so that you people can take a look at some of these new things out there. Now, Eric, I don't know if you've seen it or not, Alex, but I know that Eric has. There's a webcomic created by Ian Sampson called The City of Reality, cityofreality.com. Which to me is one of the... a lot of people have a little trouble getting into the storyline, but it is to me what a webcomic can be by the use of interactive flash, by the use of different storytelling types. He takes not just the infinite canvas Scott McCloud talked about, but he takes in a lot of the technology and a lot of the possibilities of what can be done. He's not creating a comic that can go from web to print, but something that can only exist within the webcomic medium itself. Add to that, he's got a storyline that I love, and he has got a unique art style, that a very cartoony style that lends itself to the storyline with both its serious and humorous aspects. So that's thecityofreality.com by Ian Sampson. Go ahead and stop over there and tell him that we said to say hi. And on that note, I want to go ahead and thank our guests, Alex Heberling, I can't speak today, and Eric Kimball. Well, go ahead and say goodbye.
Good night, Alex.
And Eric Kimball. Eric?
I said good night.
Okay. And you can see their stuff over at alexesguide.net. BladeBunny.com and Exiern, EXIERN.com. At least Blade Bunny people can know how to spell Eric.
Yeah. Exiern, and Exiern, they don't see my stuff anymore. They see what I have created and let loose upon the world.
And of course, stop by and see my work over at MurrayandLouie.com and the webcomic community over at 910 Comics, 910CMX.com. And on that note, I'm Thomas Revoir. I'll see you in the funny papers.